Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Hello and welcome to the Full of Beans podcast, hosted by myself, Hannah Hickenbotham. Throughout these podcast episodes, we will speak to a range of individuals about their experience of eating disorders, with the aim of increasing awareness and understanding, whilst reducing stigma and isolation. Please note that the topics discussed in this podcast may be triggering for some individuals, so tread lightly, check in with yourself, and reflect on these conversations. Today I'm joined by Rachel Evans. Rachel is a bulimia recovery specialist and has created her practice to use her personal experience of recovering from an eating disorder to support clients as a chartered psychologist in their eating disorder recovery journey. Rachel specialises in bulimia recovery and joins us today to discuss navigating this recovery process. Hello, Rachel.
Hi.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Good. No, it's really nice. It feels like so long ago since I came on your podcast. I don't even remember what month that was.
Yeah, I was actually feeling a bit ill the other day and I said to my husband, I was like, oh, I don't know if I'll do the podcast tomorrow or cancel it. But I was like, we've been planning it since like October or something, haven't we? And now we're recording it in January. I was like, I don't think we can move it like that.
Oh, absolutely. Are you feeling okay? Are you okay to do it?
Yeah, I'm okay.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Yeah. What was wrong yesterday?
I was just feeling really sick. Just annoyingly, do you know when you can't really eat much and you're just like, oh
yeah. I feel like there's a lot going around at the minute. I don't know whether it's like January blues, but like my partner was off all of last week and it's not like him to be ill at all. Fortunately I missed it. I was like, nope, not having that, and didn't, so it was good.
Yeah, I don't know if it was something I ate, because my like husband hasn't got it and he's fine. Usually he'll get stuff like that. But yeah, fine now, happy to be
amazing
here.
Good. Well, I'm super excited to speak to you today. And obviously we're going to focus on bulimia recovery. And just as I was like thinking about doing the podcast today, I was like, I always assume when I do a podcast, you know, if it's about a specific eating disorder, that people will just know what it is when they listen, which is a bad assumption to make. So I thought, could you start just by explaining to the listeners what bulimia is, please?
Yeah. So I'll just explain it in like layman's terms, not like, yeah, here's the DSM definition, but it's obviously a diagnostic statistical manual. So it's when people binge eat. So we might define a binge as you're kind of eating more than people would usually eat in that certain amount of time. So for example, like a binge wouldn't be, say, Christmas Day. People tend to overeat a lot, and it's kind of normal for that situation. And I guess binge eating tends to be characterized by often eating quite fast, often eating in secret, can come with this sense of shame after you've eaten that amount of food, or like kind of feelings of guilt. So someone will have a binge, and then binge eating disorder, which is when people have the binge, but bulimia is when people also then try and compensate for that. So that could be purging in terms of like making yourself vomit. It could be things like taking laxatives, it could be over-exercising, it could be fasting, could be taking diuretics, which are like water tablets, misusing insulin. And I suppose just to say now, if you're thinking, oh, I haven't thought of those things, they're not good things to be doing, which I'm sure we'll come on to. And also with bulimia, similar to quite a few eating disorders, like people's perceptions of themselves is really influenced by their weight and shape, and their body. So that is bulimia for the sort of criteria that are like a certain amount of times per month to be doing it to be classified, but I don't think that's particularly helpful for people who, you know, might be struggling and then maybe can't get help because they don't quite meet a criteria or, you know, that sort of thing. You're nodding, you're like, yeah, I think so.
Yeah. It's interesting because I thank you so much for that. That was a really lovely overview to kind of start the podcast. But when you were just saying about that kind of, I guess, the criteria for a diagnosis, we speak a lot about like anorexia and, you know, you needing to be a certain BMI in order to get the anorexia diagnosis. But if you're not that BMI, then you get atypical anorexia. But we don't talk a lot about what happens with bulimia if you don't meet that criteria of like a certain, you know, number of binges and purges. And equally, like you said, it's completely barbaric as whether you are, you know, binging and purging once a week, once a month, whatever, like that's not something that somebody with a, you know, quote unquote healthy relationship with food should be doing, and therefore, you know, that requires support. So what happens if somebody doesn't meet this sort of number of binges and purges?
I think it would really depend on where you are, the services. So just in my own personal experience, when I had bulimia, I tried to go to a charity first. Mm-hmm. I don't know why I didn't really want to go to the NHS. I knew there was a local charity. And actually for me, they said, you're too severe. We can't help you. You've got to go to the NHS. So it might be that if you don't kind of meet criteria for NHS services or other funded services, there might be like charities that could help you. But I suppose you must have the discussion as well. Just because someone's not exhibiting certain behaviours doesn't mean what's going on in their head isn't there, and that's, they're not really struggling with that every day. So I do think it's difficult, but I do think the services, obviously, as you know, are like overstretched, big waiting lists. What I also found frustrating when I was recovering is that I hadn't binged and purged for, I felt like, a while, but then I still meet the criteria because it's like the amount of times you've done it over 3 months.
Right.
So say I hadn't done it for like 2 months, but it's like, oh, I've still got bulimia because
yeah,
it's like on average over 3 months, yeah, how many times you would do it. And I was thinking, oh, I want to be recovered now. But obviously you don't recover overnight, but I wanted to be like, I don't want to have a label still.
Yeah, if only it could be overnight, hey. I guess that's the problem with the way that the diagnostics are set up, and I guess this kind of is across the board for all eating disorders, is that it's very, like, because it's to do with numbers, like the number of times that you've binged and purged or your BMI or whatever, there is that cutoff point. And I guess it's, I always think, what makes that cutoff point the cutoff point?
Mm-hmm.
You know, people have arguments for why in anorexia, let's say, they need to have a certain cutoff point for BMI. I don't personally agree with it because I think, you know, you can be at a healthy BMI and have all the consequences of somebody at a lower BMI. And the same with binging and purging. You know, why is, how many times is it, an average of 3 times a week for a month?
I think it's actually, I did pull it up so I can quote you. No, it's once a week for 3 months.
Once a week for 3 months. So why?
There are different levels.
Big refund, big project, big savings at Menards. Turn your tax refund into your next big project. That patio you've been dreaming of is more affordable than you think when you do it yourself. Get free estimates fast using our landscaping design program in-store or on Menards.com. Save big on the largest selection of concrete landscaping blocks at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Turn your tax refund into a new bathroom at Menards. Make this the year you check that project off the list. Upgrade your bathroom with Max. With more than 1,000 showers, bathtubs, and surrounds, you're sure to find exactly what you need to add luxury and style to your bathroom. Save big on our entire selection of Max bathroom products. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big.
I don't have those. I don't tend to like classify my science like that. We don't work like that. But if people are interested, they could look it up. You know, there's like moderate, severe categories. Yeah. So, yeah.
So how do you work with clients to not maybe have that sort of very categorical, like, boom, yes, you have it, no, you don't kind of idea?
I don't know. We just, I suppose we might talk about eating disorder more generally rather than say, unless they're coming to me saying I have anorexia, I have bulimia, then I might talk about that specific thing. But I suppose we would talk more like eating disorder thoughts or eating disorder behaviours. Mm-hmm. I'm doing some weird like mushroom arm overview kind of gesture here with this. So I think I try to get an idea of like frequency at the beginning. And we probably talk about it as we're going through week to week, like how's your week been, what's been going on, maybe if they've had any like tools and techniques that they were going to implement, like how have they gone. And then I would just trust my clients to tell me if they feel like, you know, maybe the frequency has been reducing or it's reduced and then they have another binge and purge for whatever reason, we'll kind of deconstruct that. But I won't be like, oh, congratulations, you've been 3 weeks and not done a binge and purge, because I don't really keep track of it. Like, we just look at the whole picture, really.
Yeah. And I think, like you said before, it's often not necessarily, you know, I think it is good when people's binging and purging does reduce, that potentially shows a sign of improvement, but it might also not, because like you said, it's the thoughts that are going on, and it might just be that somebody has been able to kind of pause and stop before they do binge and purge, but they were still having all of those thoughts beforehand, you know, the pulling, maybe they were there for like 3-4 hours, like, should I, shouldn't I, should, like, and that's I think the really important thing to recognize. And I think that's, I mean, I don't have bulimia, but for me, that's something very prominent at the moment, is like the thoughts of restriction. Like I really want to restrict. I really, and it's there all the time, and the bullying in my head. I'm not actually, because I'm trying to engage in recovery, but it doesn't mean that the thoughts aren't there, which is, in my personal opinion, kind of the hardest part.
Yeah, I suppose that's a good point. We would also talk about like urges and trying to reduce the urges, because I'm thinking this, it's kind of related, you can stop me if you're like, this is too much of a tangent, but like, people recover in different ways. So I do have some clients who stop binging and purging, and then it's about maintaining that, like they stop quite quickly when we work together. I have other clients who've been working together for a couple of months, and they're still binging and purging, maybe less frequently, maybe the same frequency, but actually other stuff has changed. Like you say, maybe they're more able to talk to their thoughts and have that moment. Or maybe something I've done before, and I was talking to a client about recently, is like sometimes I'll go to the supermarket to buy the binge food, but then I would like put it back on the shelf, or I'd get to the supermarket and then go home, because I was only going specifically to buy binge food, not for like actual shopping. So those things have shifted, and if you look on paper you might say, oh, but they're still binging and purging, but maybe they're feeling better about their body, or maybe the extent of it, you know, how much they're consuming in a binge is less. So I think there's different ways that people recover, and we can't always like compare them.
Yeah, absolutely. I really agree. I think that's something so important to say about recovery, is there's no like one way to do it. And I think I remember doing a podcast, quite a while ago, I can't remember who it was with, and I was talking about, I think it was with Bethany Francois, and we were talking about binging and purging, and I was saying like, you know, should you stop the binging first or should you stop the purging first? Like, what needs to happen? And she said exactly the same as you, like, there is no right way. Like, if you stop one and you don't stop the other, like, that's okay. And yeah, so I think you're so right in terms of, ultimately, you want to get to the point of being recovered. Whatever steps it's going to take to get there, and however you get there, doesn't really matter, as long as you're kind of making progress towards the urges reducing, the behaviours reducing, the thoughts reducing. And also, you know, that's not going to happen as easy as me just saying that. Like, you know, it's going to take work, and you might stumble, and you might binge and purge, you might, you know, whatever. But that, I think, is all about recovery as well, in the fact that it isn't linear. You can sometimes re-engage, and it's how you bounce back from that rather than like falling back into those behaviors.
Yeah, like I was thinking when you're talking, like it can be quite disheartening. Mm-hmm. Like you say, it doesn't happen overnight, but I think just trying to look for, oh, what has shifted, what has changed. And I guess your guests must talk about this a lot, but like trying to think, okay, what did I learn since last time? So for example, I'll just give you a couple of examples with clients who have not binged and purged for a stretch of time, and then they've had a binge and purge, and I wouldn't count it as a relapse because it's like a one-off occasion that we can almost like zoom out of and have a look at and think, oh, what was happening then? So one was a client who had been at work all day and then had gone to the gym, and then she came home and then she was like, oh, I just started eating everything out of the cupboards. And then it was almost for her, it felt like that switch had gone. I've eaten too much, kind of stereotypical thoughts kind of came in. And at that point, she just kind of thought, I'll blow it, I'll have, you know, eat more and get rid of it. Mm-hmm. Whereas other situations, she'd been able to think, oh, I think I've eaten a bit too much, but that's okay, you know, talk herself around from it. And we kind of looked at it like she was she was really hungry at that point after the gym and quite depleted and quite tired after work. And so we were like, okay, what could we put in place if you want to start going to the gym after work again? Even stuff like have a protein shake. It's a bit cheesy, isn't it? Like gym culture. But if that's going to tide you over until you can make dinner or something, or sometimes she would have like takeaway dinner. She lived somewhere that you could get really nice like sushi and all, you know, the fancy fancy takeout. So if she was like, oh, maybe I'll like get dinner, buy dinner on the way home or something, just to stop getting over hungry. So that was a good thing for her. And then I had another client who actually had stopped binging. Oh no, she'd stopped purging before she started working with me, but she was still binging. And so we did a lot of work on kind of nutrition, making sure that she was eating enough for her body to kind of prevent binges for like physiological reasons. A lot of work about like, this isn't a good food or a bad food, you can eat all these kinds of foods. And she was feeling a lot better about her body, a lot better at work. Like, I'd say things were going really well. And then she moved from, she was living with her parents during COVID. She was in her 20s, but she'd moved back because otherwise it was a bit isolating. And then she'd moved to a house with her friend and kind of been out one day, like had been drinking a bit.
So you're running out of closet space. The good news? You don't need to stop shopping. You just need to start selling with The RealReal. The RealReal is the world's largest and most trusted resource for authenticated luxury resale. Whether it's that mini bag that can't even fit your phone, or those boots you never fully broke in, The RealReal handles everything from photography and copywriting to shipping and pricing. So you can just sit back, get paid, and make room for things that actually feel like you. And with 10,000 plus new arrivals every single day from top designers like Prada, Celine, Louis Vuitton, and Loewe, all for up to 90% off retail, you're bound to find something perfectly on brand to fill that extra closet space with. Plus, right now, you can get an extra $100 to shop when you sell for the first time. Make room for what feels like you. Go to TheRealReal.com to start selling and get your extra $100 to keep shopping at TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com. Terms apply.
Save big money on your next painting project at Menards. Pristine interior paint and primer in one is Dutch Boy's best hiding and most durable paint. It delivers a smooth, elegant finish while providing maximum scuff, stain, and mark resistance. Save big money on Dutch Boy paints and get your painting project started today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week. Save big money at
Menards. Not excessively, but a little bit. And then binged and purged when she got home. And she was like, what was that? Like, we weren't seeing each other very often at that point, but she was like, can I have a session? And she was like, it was really interesting. I had no idea why I did it. And I'm not tempted to do it again, to be honest, because I think sometimes, like, this is true for me now, like, when you break that association, mm-hmm. like, I used to like making myself vomit as part of the like ritual and the routine and the bulimia, and now I really don't. And so for her, she'd been long enough that she kind of broken it. I was like, well, that was weird, I just did that, but it didn't mean the same as when she did it before. But obviously she wanted to come and talk to me to like see what was going on and if we could talk about it. But we were just like, okay, that was a random thing to happen. Maybe next time you drink, there's some things that you could consider, but maybe it just won't happen again. Maybe it was just a weird random thing and that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that, I mean, that's really strange, isn't it? I guess almost quite a nice reflection in that, like, it's been such a long time now that I'm like, oh, I don't actually like this anymore. Like, it doesn't feel, you know, like something I want to do. And I think sometimes you do, it's almost like, this is going to sound weird, but sometimes, you know, when you haven't seen a friend for a while and then you question like, oh, why haven't I seen that friend for ages? Maybe we should hang out. And then you hang out with them and you're like, wasn't that great? Like, I don't really feel like I've missed anything. And sometimes you need that realization to be like, yeah, we've just like grown apart and we're different people now. And I guess that's kind of maybe how it can be with the binging and purging.
Yeah, because I think for me, now if I thought, oh, you have to go and do it, which I mean is different because I wouldn't be wanting to, but I thought, it takes so much time, it takes so much energy. It's a lot of hassle. Whereas at the time, the reward that you're getting from it, or the payoff, is obviously bigger than those things. Or actually, for me, part of my reason for doing it, not at the beginning but at the end, was avoidance and procrastination. So I actually wanted to be using the time to do it.
Yeah, and I think I was reading like somebody's post on Instagram earlier, the eating disorder therapist, and it was talking about like rebuilding your identity after eating disorder recovery. And it was saying how, like, you know, when you engage in an eating disorder, the like thoughts about food, weight and body are your prominent thoughts. And then that you don't have as much time to think about hobbies and family and friends. And so when you go through recovery and you start to build back in hobbies and friends and things like that, you, I don't want this to sound how it's going to sound, because it sounds like, oh, eating sort of recovery is so simple, just fill your time. But like, you don't have as much time because you've got so many other things in your like pie chart taking it up that you then, you don't have as much time. And I think that's one reason why a lot of people, you know, continue with behaviors, is because they don't have those other things. So it's like, well, I have nothing to do right now, so I might as well go exercise, or I might as well, you know, go and do another self-sabotage behavior that's part of my eating disorder, because that's the only thing I've got right now.
Yeah, I think so. I think just using myself as an example, like when my eating disorder started, it was more like orthorexia. I think I had some things that we might recognize as anorexia, not in terms of like the textbook definition, but if you talk to people about what it's like how I was thinking, what foods I was scared of, like I was scared to eat more. If I look at it, I was like, oh, okay, I was very not okay, even though I thought I was being super healthy. But I was living abroad by myself. I was like flat sharing with the family because it was cheaper, so I was kind of isolated in that I didn't really have like roommates and stuff. My colleagues were lovely, but they've obviously got their own life. They can't like be seeing me all the time. So I think I had a lot of time in the evenings, weekends, to like spend obsessing about food, doing exercise, just walking. I was, oh, I don't want to take the bus, I don't know what the bus route is, I'll just like walk way too far. Well, why?
Because I've got the time to walk.
Yeah, exactly. And then it kind of went through some ups and downs before it got to the bulimia. But then when the bulimia was bad again, I was living by myself. It was when I was the second year of my PhD, and so again I had a lot of time in the evenings kind of spent doing not much.
Yeah And I think it's really interesting about the kind of being on your own element of it, because I've mentioned this before on the podcast, but like, because this is my second time in recovery, the first time around I was at home with my parents. There was, you know, my mum worked days, my dad worked nights, so it actually worked really well in terms of supporting me, because there was somebody there in the day, there's somebody there in the evening. But that meant that, like, you know, I couldn't really do anything in secret, because there was always somebody there. But then as an adult, you know, I live with my partner, but, you know, we have different work schedules, we've got different social schedules, all of that. And so you do have more alone time where you can potentially engage in those behaviours. And it's a lot harder to fight back to the eating disorder, because it's like, well, you know, you've got half an hour or whatever. So I wondered if you had any thoughts there, you know, from your personal experience or working with clients about how to navigate that. Because I think when it's just you versus the eating disorder, it's a lot harder than when somebody else is with you and it's together versus the eating disorder.
Yeah, I think we spoke about this when you came on my podcast. But it's always that like getting angry at the eating disorder piece. Because I remember, not quite the same, but it's coming to my mind. I got really angry at the bulimia when I went on holiday because I knew he was my partner then, not my husband. But I knew he was going cycling like on the Wednesday. Say we got there on the Saturday or something. And so I just kept thinking, right, on Wednesday, I'm going to go to this shop. Like I was planning out in my head the binge and purge that was going to happen on Wednesday. And then I just was like, I've just ruined my whole holiday. Actually, I did go to the shop. I did manage to put it back. I did have like a mini binge and purge on a different day, I think, because I didn't do it on the Wednesday, but it was generally managed to not act on the thoughts, but they were there and they were like ruining the holiday. And so I think sometimes just thinking about like, I haven't done it. How much time am I spending like planning that I'm going to do these things? And then sometimes either like scheduling stuff to do in the, this is like when you're home, scheduling stuff to do in those time. So like you say, if you need something social, like calling someone, or I've just got an iPhone, so I've just got Clubhouse. So I'm just like, oh, there's stuff. It's quite nice, isn't it? Because I'm like really late to the party. It's like a live podcast, isn't it? And I'm like, oh,
I've never heard of it.
Oh, have you not? I feel like maybe it was when the first lockdown happened.
Okay.
You could only get it on iPhone, though. That's the thing.
I've got an iPhone.
Oh, right. They're like rooms, I'm saying in inverted commas. And then so people do a talk, but they can save them so you can listen to it like a podcast. But if you go onto it live, then you can like chat as a talk.
Oh, wow, that's
stuff,
so cool.
Or you can like request to ask a question or request to like say your piece. So, I've been listening to a few of those, or kind of joining a few of those, which is quite nice as like a distraction. So I know people always say distraction, but sometimes it is.
Yeah.
It's all you can do, really. Just find what works for you. I know for me, it was playing lots of Candy Crush. I was like, right, I'm playing Candy Crush. Like for me, it worked because so I kind of realized I need to stop purging. Even if I can't stop binging, I need to stop purging because that's really what was keeping it going for me. So it was like, okay, even if I have a binge, then I just cannot get rid of it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because that's going to, you know, start me off again and who knows when I'll stop. Is that like, oh, just one more time? It's like, no, that has to be the last time.
Yeah.
So I could play Candy Crush, sit on the sofa and I don't have to move. I don't have to really do anything or think anything. And I feel like it's got that little hit of like, oh, hooray, you've like got to the next level. It's like,
yeah,
occupying enough. I could kind of sit there and feel uncomfortable or be wrapped in a blanket, which, I mean, I was lucky that I had the time and space to do that. I mean, not like now I have a baby. I wouldn't be able to sit and play Candy Crush for ages. I'd be too busy looking after him. But if you are, kind of like you're saying, at home on your own, are there distraction things? Like I've had clients who do like cross stitch and knitting, and I think it's just finding what's that thing for you,
yeah,
and then just sticking at it a little bit until you've got the evidence for yourself, like, oh, like I didn't do those things this week. Or I suppose it's a bit different because I'm talking about avoiding behavior. I suppose it's a bit different if you have to make yourself eat when no one's there. But
yeah, well, I mean, no, we're kind of focusing on like purging behavior, like binging and purging, so I think that's really good. And I hope this is okay to say, but I like the fact what you said about, you know, Candy Crush having that like little bit of reward. And I think it's very similar with like the cross stitch or like if you do something like that, because you do get a hit of reward and often that's what you need. So if you try and do something like that you're not getting an instant reward from, I imagine it wouldn't be as helpful. You know, if you just sit and watch TV, that's, I mean, it's very passive. And I think then thoughts can spiral, but almost because you're having to concentrate whether it's on Candy Crush or doing a cross stitch or whatever, you're having to concentrate and then you're getting the reward. So it feels like that would be a good distraction. And I think often people kind of shame distractions. They're like, oh no, you have to sit with the feeling and all of that. And I do totally get that, but you can sit with a feeling and do something that makes it slightly easier than literally just sitting frozen still, because your brain is just going to go into overdrive.
Yeah, I think it's a bit of trial and error and a bit of this and that. Yeah. Like sometimes my clients don't give people homework as such, but we might mm-hmm. think, okay, this week sit with the feeling, see what comes up. There's a technique called urge surfing. Mm-hmm. And so it's almost like my hands doing the wave motion. It's like it gets to that peak where you're like, I absolutely have to do this. I will die if I don't do this. Just, you know, all the mm-hmm. kind of extreme thoughts. But then it kind of goes down and you're like, oh, it's not quite that bad. It's kind of passed often if you don't act on it, but it's kind of difficult to get to that point. And it's not saying that thought won't come up later, because it might do. Mm-hmm. So sometimes people kind of practice that, but then I'd say often when people do it also successfully in inverted commas and like enjoy it and actually are like, oh, I've learned something from that, it's more like I had a client who decided that she'd go and sit in the garden mm-hmm. and do it, and then she was like, yeah, why am I sitting in the garden? I can't remember.
Well, that's so funny.
I think it can be a challenge, and I think that comes back to something you were kind of saying earlier about sometimes starting small. Mm-hmm. And that might be you're starting it for 30 seconds.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's kind of different behaviors, isn't it, for the mm-hmm. purging. Like, I mean, like making yourself vomit is kind of an instant reward. Stuff like exercise, people maybe do it in their room and stuff, but it's often not as instant. Reward or like fasting tend to be longer term, so there's possibly like different strategies and, you know, thought questioning that needs to go on with those.
Mm-hmm. yeah that's interesting actually. I guess some of them aren't an instant reward. I guess, yeah, when I said about the instant reward, I was probably thinking about the self-induced vomiting, but I guess as well with things like laxatives and diuretics, that's not probably going to be a super instant reward. And maybe, I don't know, I think when I'm now thinking about that instant reward, obviously my experience has only been restriction and excessive exercise, but I'm just thinking about like maybe a spectrum of kind of, how am I trying to say this? So like when I am about to engage in a restrictive behavior, I find it very difficult to think, how is what I'm doing right now going to impact my future? Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like, okay, well, if I make myself sick, I'm going to be sick. Like that's like the immediate thing. And then I'm sure we'll come onto this in a bit, but there are those consequences in the future. And maybe I'm not, because I've never done that before, I might not know. But for me, the driver of that would be that instant reward. Mm-hmm. Whereas the driver for the restriction for me is the long-term weight loss. And so with diuretics and laxatives, where would you say that they fall on that sort of spectrum of the instant reward of like purging to weight loss? Is it somewhere on there, or am I completely lost?
Yeah, I think I get your point. I'm not going to answer it like quite specifically, but I think I take your point. So even with like making yourself vomit, mm-hmm. often the intention is to not gain weight from the binge, to get rid of the food, so it still kind of has that longer term like intention for it, like restricting or with the other things. And I suppose you can instantly take a laxative, so I suppose you've got, okay, I've done it now. Mm-hmm. If you know you've had the urge, you kind of scratch the itch to do it, it's just the effect will take mm-hmm. a few hours or more.
Yeah, and I mean obviously
does that make sense?
Yeah, no that does answer it. I guess you can't like answer for the on the whole, but does the kind of driver from diuretics and laxatives, does that align with the self-induced vomiting.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Save big money on your next painting project at Menards. Pristine interior paint and primer in one is Dutch Boy's best hiding and most durable paint. It delivers a smooth, elegant finish while providing maximum scuff, stain, and mark resistance. Save big money on Dutch Boy paints and get your painting project started today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week.
Save big money at Menards.
Thing in that, you know, people are trying to prevent weight gain, or is there other reasons why people might take the laxatives and diuretics?
I think that's the main reason. There is a piece, I'm not sure if I'm going to say this very well, but around then it's almost once people have done it, I think the primary intention, like those slimming teas and all of that jazz that aren't particularly good for you, is to prevent weight gain, but obviously you've digested the food before it's coming out, so they don't really work how we think they're going to work. There's a piece around then when people have done it, like often it's quite painful if people have been taking laxatives or taking laxatives for a while when they do go to the toilet, and then some people almost feel that they need that pain or that punishment for eating. So I think it can often turn into something more, like with the vomiting.
Yeah.
Like it starts off as one thing, like, oh, I don't want to gain weight, so I'll try and get rid of it, which, again, doesn't exactly work as maths as we think it would do. But then, you know, people might say, oh, but I need that release, that feeling that it gives me. So I think when people have had the experience, it can kind of shift to have other rewards or other reasons as well. But I would say mostly these things start as a way to try and prevent weight gain.
Yeah, I think I can align with that a lot with my relationship with exercise, in terms of it the main driver being to prevent weight gain, but then also it's like that urge, that release, that almost I see the excessive exercise as a form of self-harm, because it is that punishment and kind of pushing your body to into painful areas. So I guess, you know, that kind of makes sense as to why they're all labelled as purging behaviours, because they all, despite them being different behaviours, they've all got very similar sort of starting points and then impacts and effects as well.
Yeah.
And in terms of recovery, so we've spoken about, like, you know, trying to navigate urges, and I can imagine that that is a massive challenge that people face. Are there any other common challenges that you see with clients when they're in recovery from bulimia?
Yeah, I think one of the big ones, and I think this is any eating disorder, is like the fear of the unknown. It's almost like you have to get past that to be able to take some action or to be able to start questioning things. So that unknown, like, well, what is my body going to look like? What's going to happen if I maybe started eating regular balanced meals, for example? Or what would happen if I stopped purging but carried on binging, if that were to happen in someone's recovery? So I guess when that happens, I suppose if people are coming to see me because I'm a private therapist, they've already got a certain amount of trust that something can change and something can be different and it will be more positive on the other side. But I think it's really tapping into like that motivation and that why, because we don't know what would happen to your body. Anyone that promises you, oh, you can lose weight in recovery, you know, or you can control your weight, like, they can't really promise you that. I think you'd still be restricting, or you'd still be thinking about food a lot. Or on some kind of weird fad diet. So I think just trying to work out, okay, but what's more important to me than that? What can I take on this fear of the unknown in order to gain? So that might be like to do with your relationships, to do with your career, just general well-being, like wanting your time back, hobbies that you might have, you know, let slip. I think that's a big one. You're kind of nodding. I think that's across the board, yeah. Isn't it?
Yeah. I think that's a really interesting point that you made about, like, when people come to you as a private therapist, they've already got that sort of trust that things can change. I guess it's kind of, you know, if someone's coming to see you, there's like a thing of, you know, there is hope for me here. Like, I do want to change my life, but I just don't even know where to start. And I guess that is almost the position I'm in at the moment, in that, like, I know that things can change. I have ideas of what I want to change and there's hope, but then it's like about implementing it. So then how do you work with clients, I guess, to then reduce the behaviors or kind of guide them towards recovery? I mean, we spoke about earlier, it's not just about reducing the behaviors, so many other things, but what's the next step in the process once they've started working with you?
Yeah, I think it's very different depending on, you know, where the person is when they come to me. Mm-hmm. Again, I'm kind of lucky in that quite a lot of my clients are quite self-aware, mm-hmm. about what's happening and what's going on, and maybe they've already done some reflection about their past, like my mm-hmm. kind of longer term one-to-one clients. You know, they obviously haven't got everything figured out, or, you know, they've got some kind of gaps in their knowledge, but so we tend to have a look. Like, I am not a dietitian, I'm not a nutritionist, but we would have a look, like, okay, what kind of foods are you eating, what foods are you thinking are good and bad foods, because it often triggers for a binge could be eating something that's like a bad food, inverted commas, or too much. So we kind of look, what are their triggers? But it's kind of hard to explain because it is quite like semantics of, like, how do you do this without it being a diet, because it sounds like a diet. But trying to help people eat regular balanced meals, and that does, I don't make anyone do anything. If my client's like, I really don't like breakfast, I'm not going to make them eat breakfast. A lot of my clients who don't want breakfast then change their mind and actually decide that they feel better if they start their day with breakfast, or they feel better if they had a snack as well, because maybe they've got more energy or they can concentrate better or something. So we try and look at, like, balancing their physiology and stopping blood sugar kind of being all over the place, because I think that's quite important. Like, you know, when I was talking earlier about the client who had a binge after the gym because she was just really hungry. I don't mean to say just to minimise it, but she was really hungry and depleted. So we kind of try and put people in the best physiological state to be able to combat those urges, because I'm not sure if you have noticed in your recovery, I think when you are quite drained and depleted, it does often seem harder to talk back to those thoughts. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're really hungry, then if you've had a day that maybe, I don't know if you're on a meal plan, but if people have kind of stuck to their meal plan or their meal structure, that's the word I use, yeah. Structure, then, you know, it's possibly easier to mm-hmm. have the next meal. So we kind of look at that, and then it's really different for different people depending on what they're coming with. Some people, it seems like a good area to start would be looking at body image. You know, some people, what else do we look at? I guess any triggers and why that thing is a trigger, and starting to unpick the beliefs around that thing. And then it's kind of a juggling act of, like, I do think it's important to look at people's past and think, where do these thoughts and beliefs come from? And I also do hypnotherapy sessions with clients, when I guess the goal of hypnotherapy is to talk to someone's subconscious mind and help them remember, like, what was going on when this came about? What beliefs did you make? Or, like, what meaning did you give to those events? That sometimes is, like, I don't want to say wrong, but we might have interpreted something differently at the time. Like, a really good example that I can give you is, I had a client and her memory in the hypnotherapy was her getting bullied about her body, And then when she thought of the memory, she was like, I don't know why that girl was bullying me, because her body looked exactly like my body. I mean, even if it was different,
yeah,
she shouldn't have been bullying her. But it was just really interesting that she was like, oh, I've carried this for a long time. Like, my body should be different. But what gave that girl the rights?
Mm-hmm.
And like I say, even if the girl had a different body, it still doesn't give her the right. But in this example, it was just quite, what word am I looking for? Striking, maybe, of like, I've just made that belief of being carrying around. And obviously other stuff has happened to reinforce that belief since then, like diet culture and, you know, 2000s magazines and all of that unhelpful stuff. But it's interesting to look kind of like, where did this start? There's never just one cause, but what were some of the factors going on? How can we start to reframe those events? So it's not that the things didn't happen to you, because obviously the root of some people's eating disorders are like trauma and things like that, maybe stuff that's gone on in their family when they were younger. That stuff still happened, but how could we help you think differently about it so you don't need the eating disorder as a way to cope? Because we've not really talked about that yet, but we will probably have a look, like, how is this bulimia helping you? And sometimes people are like, but it's not helping me, and I'm like, there's got to be something good about it, otherwise you wouldn't keep doing it. So like I say, for me at the end, it was like, this is a distraction now. This is avoidance. I can avoid doing my PhD, which the stupid thing is, I was good enough and it was going well until I decided that it wasn't. But I thought it wasn't. And I was putting loads of pressure on myself and like worrying about reviewers and stuff. Oh, so I don't have to deal with that if I'm making myself sick. Or it could be like relationships. Sometimes people maybe want to avoid a relationship for certain reasons. So if they're doing this, they feel like they can't be in a relationship. Like, there's lots of different reasons. So we go into that. Is that everything? I don't know. Like I say, it's just trying to juggle all these things at the same time. And something I do talk to my clients a lot about is like just having really good communication. Because like, I'm trying to juggle these things for them. And sometimes it might be 1 week we're like, this thing has happened this week and we plan to do something else, but we really need to talk about this one thing that's happened this week. So I had a client recently and we said we were going to do a certain technique from neurolinguistic programming, but then we kind of got put off for 3 weeks and I was like, I don't want her to think, Rachel said we're going to do this, but we're not doing it. But, you know, it seemed like other things were the priority. So I think just as a general point for everyone, like, communication is really important, and trying to think, okay, you know, I can't read your mind.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to give me some feedback, like, I really liked what we did last week. Or, you know, some clients are kind of clients who want me to give them something to do between sessions, or we will decide, right, this is your action, whereas other clients would hate that. It's more just like, here's what we talked about. I'll see you. Well, not even I'll see you next week, because my clients can talk to me between sessions. But like, here's the overview. Okay, go away and do something with that. Sorry, that was a big monologue. Do you want
to? No, it's absolutely fine. I think it's really interesting and like a really key point that you said about like all the different aspects that can cause like an eating disorder, and, you know, that you maybe need to look into in order to unpick like what the bulimia serves for you. You know, I can imagine a lot of people will hold on to things from their past that, however big or small, you know, maybe they need to reframe them in their mind or work through them, different experiences, so that you're not kind of holding that with you anymore and then relying on the bulimia to sort of distract from it, or, you know, give you purpose or whatever, things like that. So I mean, that's a really good point. And it just like reinstalls that thought that at the end of the day, the eating disorder goes so much deeper than just the behaviors. I think, you know, we can very much think, you know, recovery from bulimia is about stopping binging and purging. But I've known a lot of people that have maybe not addressed the deeper thoughts underneath, and therefore they've just transitioned into a different eating disorder or a different mental health condition. And that's nowhere better. But it just, because you don't actually go into what the bulimia is providing for you. Even if you think this is the shittest thing I've ever done in my life, there's probably still going to be something that you know, underneath it all, it is serving for you. And I guess just kind of whilst we're talking about the behaviours, because I wanted to speak to you a little bit about the consequences of the behaviours as well. Are you okay to just maybe explain a bit about, you know, the negative impacts of binging and purging?
Yeah, can I just say one thing on your other point super quickly? I
was going to say, of course.
But I've got to say something that I also do with people. It's like looking at the future. So when you're talking, I was thinking, like, personally, I use an integrated approach now because I think it's important to look at the past. But I think if we spent all the time looking at the past, people would be like, but I really need some tools to help me stop binging and purging right now. So we need some present and we need the future. So I think it's kind of good to have all of those aspects in therapy, which I think quite a lot of kinds of therapy do have, but not all. Depends what approach you're going for. The consequences. Okay, there are quite a lot. I usually forget quite a few, and then when I come off the podcast with someone, I'm like, oh, I've got all of those things. But if we think about the vomiting, obviously, it's like, do you know when you just have that word, you can edit it out. It's like when people start every sentence with
my grandma always starts sentences with no, and sometimes she'll literally, like, not even, she's literally starting a brand new conversation, she's not even responding to you, and she'll go no, and you're just like, that's so negative, start at least with yes.
Sorry, no, yes. Like, yes or no, grandma. It's like when you do it though, you then you can't stop yourself. Like, I remember I had some interviews when I was applying for unis, and then my dad was like interviewing me, and I just every
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
You're listening to a podcast right now, driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own podcast is free and easy. Upload an episode and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads just like this. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start your new podcast for free today at RSS.com.
Question. I was like, he kept telling me off. I was like, I can't help it now. Okay, now I've said let me and think about it. Yes. So thinking is obviously not very good for your digestive system. And it can be quite bad for your esophagus as well because of the acid, and then acid can also impact your teeth, which actually for me was one of the big reasons that I wanted to stop binging and purging, because it was really damaging my teeth, and that's like something that you can see. For everyone, like, I think some of the other things, if it's in your body, unless you're having reflux or something as a consequence, you kind of just think, oh, it'll be fine. And then also when you're purging, that imbalances your electrolytes, so actually it could impact your heart, which is quite dangerous because then you could die. But people think it will never happen to me. I know I definitely thought that. I was like, no, it's fine, it won't happen, but does happen to people. So if you like go to your GP, you can get your electrolyte levels tested, and sometimes people get prescribed potassium tablets and things. Just kind of general health, like all eating disorders really, like hair, skin, that kind of jazz. I'm like, I think there was a really important one. Even just stuff like, actually you can burst blood vessels in your eyes kind of from the pressure of being sick. People often get, I can't remember what they call it now. What's the word gone out of my head? Like when your glands and your face and neck kind of swell up and your face looks really puffy afterwards, for a few days. There's like a slang name that people call it, but I can't remember what. Not chipmunk cheeks. No. Anyway, if you know, you know. And then
look,
thinking
about,
yeah, laxatives can obviously be very damaging to your digestive system. So, you know, sometimes with, well, with clients who are taking laxatives, I do like to work with their GP or with a dietitian or someone to kind of help them, because sometimes actually it's not a good idea just to stop taking them, depending on how many you've been taking. Sometimes it's actually a better idea to kind of reduce the amount so your digestive system can kind of get back to working as it should. And then over exercise, it's just general stuff like overuse injuries, which again, people think, oh, it's not going to happen to me, or probably over exercise through an injury, but you could really damage yourself, especially if you know, you're not giving your body what it needs the rest of the time. I guess fasting, probably going to have like low energy, and then a lot of potentially the symptoms of starvation that we might see. So I suppose like lack of energy, lack of concentration, sometimes people might lose their periods, that kind of stuff. So I think sometimes it's not like obvious to see what's going on, not just about bulimia, but when I work with clients with other eating disorders, sometimes I'm like, oh, wouldn't it be cool if we could like just unzip your sounds awful unzip your skin and like see what's going on. And it, because then you could see, oh, look at my bones from this. But because we can't see, unless it's like I say, I was like, oh, my teeth, or when I was really restricting, I was like, oh, my hair is falling out, like, you know, no one's business. I'm laughing because I was always like, in the shower, do you know when your hair comes out? And then I was like, oh, I've got my hair mouse again. I'm trying to collect it up. And you're like, oh, this is not good. Happened after I had the baby as well. I was like, oh no.
Yeah.
You saw your hair.
I think you're right, though. I think as awful as it is, sometimes it does need to be like a visual thing. I think that's one thing that I have really struggled with in terms of being like, everything's fine because I look fine, so that's great. And someone, I had to go and get some bloods done, and I remember someone saying to me, just be aware that often, you know, your bloods can be fine, and it's when you then start to engage in recovery that's when things show up. And you know, I think it's very easy for the eating disorder to be like, well, you know, your bloods are fine, so I don't know what you're talking about. Like, you're obviously, you know, you're obviously fine, so you don't need to recover or whatever. And it can very much kind of adapt those thoughts. So, yeah, as horrible as I think the sort of visual signs can be, I think, like you say, if we could unzip ourselves and see what was going on inside, it might have an impact. But I think also just what I found, this is going to sound really bad to say, like, to be motivating, but just hearing from other people about things that they've experienced, because I think you do often think, oh, it won't happen to me, like, there's no way it'll happen to me. And then when you hear people, real people, like, yeah, this is what happened to me, but it only happened like 10 years after or whatever, you know, because often it's not when you're in the depth of the eating disorder, it's years later when you're trying to thrive and live your life. And I'm sorry to be so, like, you know, on a downer here, but I think it's real talk in terms of, it's not necessarily going to be right now that you see it. It might be in a while, but kind of there are massive consequences to these actions. And that's not to scare to anybody, and I'm not saying that, you know, it's your choice to recover and all of that, but I think sometimes you do just need something that motivates you to, as hard as it is, to kind of get engaged and get recovering.
Yeah, I think you had another point in there that was kind of about people's bodies can be very protective, and you can be doing stuff that your body really doesn't like, but actually it's working really hard to keep you functioning. But it doesn't mean that your body's happy, and it's like you said, like, it's not thriving. I'm not sure if you've had this recommendation for a book on the podcast before, but I think it's such a good book that talks about that. It's called Sick Enough.
Sick Enough. Okay.
Read it.
No, I haven't.
She's called Jennifer Galdiani.
Okay.
I'm reading it because it's on my bookshelf. I think it's just such a good book. If people are interested in like the biology and the more like sciencey side of eating disorders, she just explains it really well. She uses like lots of case studies. And the whole point is like people saying, oh, I'm not sick enough. And like, well, okay, well, when is sick enough? I just think it's quite pricey. I think it's about £30. So it's not cheap, but I do think it is a good book, and you probably sell it afterwards if you want to.
No, thank you for that. I think would really interest me, because I do have a very sciencey brain, and often I need things kind of laid down to me factually rather than anecdotally. So I'll put it in the show notes as well with a link to it for people. So I'm just kind of aware of the time, but I did just want to ask before we finish up, and I don't think I wouldn't have an answer to this question, which is also why I want to ask it, because I don't know whether I've seen it very much. I think we see a lot about supporting somebody with anorexia, you know, as a loved one or whatever. But I think, what I wanted to ask was, if somebody's family member has bulimia, what would be your top tip for supporting them through recovery?
Yeah, I think my top tip would just be to understand that they're not doing it on purpose. It's like not intentional, probably similar that you've heard before people say about anorexia, but like, I think it is really hard when you're struggling, and if, you know, you feel like you have to do these behaviors, someone just telling you, oh, don't do it. Well, my podcast is called Just Eat Normally. Someone's like, oh, just eat normally, oh, just eat this, it's fine. You have to go and get rid of it. And I think it can be really difficult if people are binging and purging when others are in the house. Do you know, if you then make that person feel like they're under a microscope, potentially not gonna help their, depending on where they are in the eating disorder, they might just find other places or other means to do it. Eating disorders are quite sneaky and quite inventive. So I think it's just obviously with their best interests in mind, you know, if hard to say where is that line when people are really physically harming themselves, but I think it is about trying to hold space for someone, and they might be engaging in behaviors that you know are really not good for them, and it is really hard to see. And I think just asking them how you can support them as well, because it might be that you were saying about you actually found it beneficial to have your parents, either or of them, at home. So it might be that they're like, oh, I actually said this to my partner once, because what happened was, when the bulimia started, it was waking up in the night and like just eating, because that was like the only time I would let myself eat properly. Well, not even properly, but like foods rather than just like really restricting. But then I got into the habit of just waking up and eating so much food from the kitchen. When I stayed over at his house, sometimes maybe we'd been going out for like 1 or 2 years, I was like, if I wake you up in the night, just hold me and do not let me go down to the kitchen. So he did, and I was really angry with him, but he like did it. And for me, that was interesting, because it's like, you know what we were saying about that urge setting? It was like, oh, I did go back to sleep. I didn't have to go and do it. I think there was a piece for me about the physiological at the start of the binging and purging. I actually needed more food, and that was the only way I could get it. But do you know, if my point was going to be, if, you know, they're saying to you, can you please sit with me after a meal? You know, try and be present for the person. Don't just be sat there on your phone. Like, you know, ask them what they need. Sometimes it's difficult, sometimes it might be, please don't have any chocolate in the house. Even if you want chocolate, can you, you know, it might be you questioning your own relationship with food a little bit, but you know, is it possible not to have those foods in the house? Like, I've got a podcast episode, it's like a Christmas episode from last year, but I think it's about like negotiating and thinking like, oh, both of you probably have an ideal situation, but there's somewhere in the middle probably that you're going to meet on this thing. So how could you try and have a conversation about it? Obviously, like trying to pick a good time when no one's tired or angry or anything. And like, often, I don't know if you find like going on a walk just to talk about stuff, and, you know, maybe try and make a plan with them. Hopefully, if they, assuming they are engaged or want to do that. But I know when my dad knew that I was binging and purging when I was living on my own, he confronted me about it, and I was like, no, it's not happening. And then that was kind of that, because I think he thought, well, I don't know what I can do, unfortunately. But I suppose just trying to educate yourself more about eating disorders. And like we've already said, like everyone is so different. But if you can kind of get some idea, someone's listening to this podcast, so hopefully that's a good start.
Yeah. I think that communication element is like I always think the most important part in terms of, you know, maybe going and have a little read beforehand, but then not assuming that you know exactly what's going on and asking the person, you know, from their perspective, you know, what's going on and how can I help you and what do you need, and not assuming that every day what they need is going to be the same thing. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think you knocked the nail on the head there. And I think also appreciating that even though they're, you know, hopefully engaging in recovery now, it doesn't mean that it's going to be a walk in the park and every day they're going to do. I, like my mum a few weeks ago was like, okay, let's put together a plan. And then we got to the end of the week and I hadn't followed the plan. And she was like, well, why haven't you followed the plan? Like, we put the plan together. And I'm like, well, if it was that easy, then I would just, it would all be good. So I think, yeah, just being able to have that open communication with each other and how you can support them and how you can support yourself are really good tips.
Yeah, I think as well, like just it's okay for the other person to not be okay. I think sometimes when people want to help, they want you to be happy or like, you know, you're trying to fight an urge. You're probably going to be a bit grumpy and that's okay if you just want to sit and watch TV and not do much, or you might want to go out and do stuff. Like I think just appreciating you, it's not on you to make that person feel better. It's like not your responsibility, and people have different emotions and that's okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, just we're all different.
I said that because my husband, I think it was only my partner, just kept like, at one point I just wasn't okay about stuff. I can't remember what it was, just mentally I just was like not having a good time. I'm just generally not feeling okay every day. I can't remember what, like I say, I can't remember what it was, but he kept asking me, are you okay? And I stop asking me it, because I say no and then you don't like the answer, like just leave it, just don't ask me, just let me go throughout my day not being okay, and I'm okay with that for a while. Like,
yeah, I think sometimes the direct question of are you okay, as much as it is coming from a good place, sometimes it's better to just talk about other things or ask it in a different way, maybe not so directly. Yeah, that's a very good point. So you mentioned your podcast, Just Eat Normally. So where can people find you for more amazing tips like what you've given today?
Yeah. Oh, thank you. So my Instagram is rachel.evans.phd. I'm not super active at the minute, but there's quite a lot if you like scroll down and have a look. And yeah, the podcast is still going. And I also try and repost stuff from other people on stories, so you can get a range of different voices about recovery. And then my website is eatingdisordertherapist.co.uk.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much, Rachel. I feel like this episode is going to be so helpful for people, you know, whether they're in recovery or trying to get on that path. So yeah, thank you very much.
If you enjoyed listening today, you won't want to miss next week's episode, so be sure to subscribe. Eating disorders are crippling illnesses, but with the right support, they can be recovered from. We really hope you enjoyed this episode, but if you require more support right now, please look into charities such as First Steps and Beat for support, or talk to someone you trust.
You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own is free and easy. Upload an episode, and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and hundreds more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads like this, even with just 10 listeners a month. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start free at RSS.com.
You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own podcast is free and easy. Upload an episode and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads just like this. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start your new podcast for free today at RSS.com.